Okay, we're interviewing with William McKay and Ballinafad on the 24th of August, 2009. Welcome, William, and can you give us your full name, please?
William Milton McKay, as the documents will show. Milton being from my maternal grandfather, Milton Gordon. And I notice question two here is my age of 68, in case Jim fails to ask me that.
And give us your father's name.
My father was Robert Earl McKay. My grandfather would be William McKay of the Fallbrook family, and great-grandfather Donald McKay.
So we share our great-grandfather,
yes,
Donald.
We do.
Yeah. And can you push that back into Scotland? Did Donald come from Scotland himself?
Donald made the crossing. I have dates on record of anywhere from 1865 to 1869. It may be that that can be more closely verified with a little more research on it. And thanks to Jim having done some research in the old country, I know there was a succession of Williams prior to Donald. So it's all the more important that we have the second name to sort out the Williams, but I do not know my grandfather's second name.
Okay. And on your mother's side, what was your mother's name, Bill?
My mother was Isabel Scott Gordon. Her family being her father, Milton H. Gordon, Nellie Gamble was his wife. They lived south of Ottawa on the Rideau, or close to the Rideau River at Manotick.
Okay, and did you ever visit the McKay homestead on the ninth line there at the creek when you were younger?
I can't say that you could call it visiting, because by the time I arrived on the scene, or at least possibly within 2 years, it had been sold to the Vaughan family. But I do recall driving past it, usually in bad weather for some reason, and it would inevitably be pointed out as the original McKay homestead. More recently, revisiting it, I had a fairly accurate picture in my mind, except that I had to reorient my directions a little bit, because I remembered it fronting onto the ninth line, and it sort of sits on a diagonal with the laneway off the side road.
You were with us there in May when we planted the little tree in front of the old house.
Yes.
Yes. Did you ever meet Sandy himself?
I met Sandy. I also met Kate, who lived with him in the latter years. They and my grandmother, Annie Mae Sinclair, are the only members of that generation that I ever knew personally. But I do have recollections of visiting Sandy when he lived at Silver Creek. This would be after he'd moved off the farm. And Kate lived there at that time. I've actually heard Sandy play the fiddle. And
I understand
that that fiddle has remained in the family, so I'm glad to hear that.
I brought it out today. We'll get a picture of it before we go. And you can pretend to play it if you like. Yes, well, you've been following with interest the efforts to preserve that log cabin that's inside that vinyl siding, and we're still working on that. We've appreciated your support on that, and The next meeting of council should be on the 21st of September, we think, when maybe a final decision will get made about it being a heritage building or not. So the McKays were clearly from Scotland, from north of Inverness there. The Gordons, you mentioned Ireland.
They came via Ireland, and yet they were Scottish originally. And they made the crossing. Apparently it's about 11 miles across at the narrowest point. And in fact, there's a Cape Breton fiddle tune called Crossing to Ireland that tells me more about their state of mind when they did that than any book or discussion possibly could tell.
So if we took a blood sample, you would sort of turn up Scottish or Celt. Do you think of yourself that way?
More and more I do. When you're a kid, you don't think about these things at all.
Yeah, that's true.
But you do come to think about them more. And I think, Jim, it might have been you that speculated that I'm genetically predisposed to like Cape Breton fiddle music. And that was probably one of the things that really kind of brought forward my awareness of all this kind of activity.
Have you been over to Scotland to look around where these folks came from at all?
Not with the awareness that I would have now. I have visited Scotland back, it would be sometime around 1974 when my wife and I, my wife Mary, and I were living in Germany teaching with the Department of National Defense. We did visit Scotland, but I had nary a clue as to where to go to find out anything about my ancestors. I now have to visit again, now that I have a clue.
Yeah. So your father was Earl McKay. Where did you grow up? Where were you? Where was he living then?
Well, by the time I was born, the Williams family had moved off the farm where they had been for several years after his death. They moved down to Brampton, to Elizabeth Street in Brampton. Just about the time I was born, they were unable to continue to rent the premises that they were living in Brampton. And at any rate, my father had just been married in 1940. I may have been on the way by the time the news came that they couldn't live in that house anymore. And so Archie, Jesse, and my grandmother moved to Toronto. And my parents moved to a little cottage in Huttonville beside the Credit River, beside the mill at Huttonville. And that's really where I originate. But not many years after that, this was quite a meager cottage that they were renting. And my dad bought 2 acres between Huttonville and Brampton on Queen Street West at the second line and proceeded to build a house there. And by that time, I was more or less conscious of what was going on. And I was, you couldn't say I could help with construction, but I was surrounded by construction and aware of construction all the time, and that's sort of turned out to be a principal direction of my life.
You you mentioned being married. Do you want to tell us who your wife was and where you met her?
Her maiden name was Mary Ireland. Born in London, England. She and her brother and her mother came over together. Their father, Les, had preceded them immediately after World War II. And by the time I met her, she was in Port Credit. I was in Brampton, not too far apart. And I think it was in membership in a sports car club or something of that nature that we actually met. Subsequent to that, my career was essentially in Toronto. We moved to Toronto and lived there for many years. And since then have moved east, first to Picton and now to Trenton, sort of following her side of the family.
This is the violin that belonged to Sandy McKay, and Bill McKay's tuning it up for us.
You've got that on tape,
eh? Yeah.
Boy.
No,
that'll be a dandy.
Starting now, you're on tape.
Well, I'm not going to play it.
No, just a few chords.
The next tape will be with you.
Tell us about the violin, the Stradivarius,
well,
side of it, and so on.
It's a fairly good violin, just to look at. It's been, as I said, 2 years since I've picked up my dad's, and I'm not going to be able to get it tuned, and if I could get it tuned, probably couldn't play it. But it is, it's a decent instrument, and I've heard Sandy play this same violin when I was a kid. I was not very old at the time, but we visited Sandy and Kate, living with him at the time, at Silver Creek.
I see.
And driving up the other day, I tried to spot his old place, and it's difficult because the road, there's so much more road there than there used to be. But I think if I were to walk past it, I'd spot it, unless it's gone. But I don't think so.
No, it's not gone.
I don't think it is, no.
Mm. And he used to play for house parties, I guess? And
yeah, I was never there at a house party. We'd always be visiting his relatives. It would be a little quieter. But he would play it. Now, I don't remember he and my dad ever playing together. And I'm not sure why, because my dad played too. I guess he just didn't take his fiddle along with him. You have to take the fiddle to play it. And at that time, I was probably so young and so clueless that I didn't necessarily realize for sure how Kate fit into the family.
Oh, yes.
Kate was the woman of the house at
that
time. But now I know.
She spent her life housekeeping for various men, I guess, starting with Donald and Sandy and so.
Well, and she and Nell lived for quite a while in Georgetown.
Yes, that's right. They lived separately there. I stayed with Kate one winter when I was going to high school.
When he got married.
And then I used to go to Nell's place to practice my piano lessons. Bill, just tell us a bit more about your father, what he was doing when you were growing up.
Well, prior to that, he had farmed, I guess, from about 1922 to 36 on the 10th line at 32 Side Road, I believe, was the farm that that family would call home. But farming didn't agree with him very well. He had asthma, and I think he was glad to get out of it. He and his brother Archie bought a trucking business in Brampton, and the whole family, which at this time would be my father, his brother Archie, his sister Jessie, and his mother Annie, they all moved to Brampton. And shortly after that, I was born, and they moved. They were no longer able to live at Brampton in the house that they had rented there. And Archie and Jessie and my grandmother all moved to the city, to Toronto. And I ended up out at Huttonville.
I used to visit Archie and Jesse when I was at university, and they were living on Broadview.
948 Broadview.
Yeah.
I've spent quite a time there, actually. We'd visited quite regularly. Part of the reason, of course, because I'm sure you knew Jesse fairly well.
Yeah.
And, of course, if you visited Jesse, you had so much entertainment and good times that you always wanted to go back and visit. So we were down there quite a bit.
She was a great teacher, I'm sure.
Yes, yeah, I think the kids that she had lucked in.
Mm. So there's a pattern that we've seen in the community with other interviews, that a lot of families that started here and on the land the land wasn't enough, or it wasn't good enough, there were too many kids, there were a lot of reasons why families left, but it was really a pattern, and your family was into it too. You have to make your living somewhere else because it could only support certain people, and that's how your migration was south to...
Well, that's a pattern that is sort of in the process of recurring. Our two children are Leslie Ann, who is in Toronto at U of T right now, and Scott James, who is in Calgary practicing as an engineer. And that was a typical case that when he graduated from Queens, he looked around Ontario, and much like the farmers didn't like their prospects very much, he didn't like the prospects too much for mechanical engineers in Ontario, and is presently, I think he's been in Calgary now about 3 years, and looks like he might well turn into an Albertan.
Well, we have on the one side nostalgia for the good old days, those of us who lived here and come back, remembering how all the families were self-sufficient and lived off the farm, and someone called it even subsistence farming, and tight community and those values. But it isn't just a loss. People went out into the world, into the neighboring cities, or as you're saying with your children as far as Alberta, to have a more global national outlook on Canada and even some global connections. So it's a move, and even the nostalgia for the UK, for the Scottish and Irish roots, is it's there, but it isn't as crucial as it once was. Our parents, our grandparents belonged to the Orange Society or the Scots Wahé or whatever, and so it's a trend. This community is filled up with other folks as well, coming to look for quiet places to live where there's not too much happening. So it's the sociology is quite interesting. What kind of feelings or vibes do you get when you come back in the community the few times you've been in?
Well, strangely enough, it does kind of feel like home, because Belnafad was always clearly represented in family lore as the center of the world. Some may consider Paris or London or New York, but we know that the real center is Belnafad. And there have been a couple of returns in a way. When I was in grades 6 and 7, I went to school at the Stone School, which is on the 7th line, where the Limehouse side road comes out to the 7th line. It's not there anymore, not a sign of it.
I remember it. Yeah.
But I was there for 2 years, and my father built a house on a lot off the Henderson farm, immediately south of the Stone School, and it's still there. It's a good thing he set it well back from the road, because the road's much wider than it used to be, and yeah, Now it's too close to the road. But I actually dug up some pictures of that house under construction and a picture of the Stone School, and there was only one in the entire collection. So that was a bit of a return to the north of Georgetown area.
Yes, 3 or 4 miles south of the Fed.
In the meantime, for several years, we would attend the Sinclair Picnic, and as often as not, it would be at the hall at Belnafad, and the Sinclairs, being so much more numerous than the McKays, could pretty much fill any hall they wanted to, and certainly would fill the Belnafad hall. And this is where a lot of the stories emanate from about earlier times. Jim, I was noticing in your history of James Palmer a little note about the ball team in Belnafad. There was one person unidentified in the photograph. Maybe it was my Uncle Archie. Because anytime I'd visit in Toronto, I'd go to ball games with Archie. either just local neighborhood games or to see the Toronto Maple Leaf AAA team. And he would tell stories of playing baseball in Balnafad. He played catcher, and he had some crooked fingers to prove it. Huh. And so that was one of the Balnafad stories right there.
My dad also would remember playing ball on the ninth line in the Linden there, just north of the McKay farm, and just south of the Sinclair homestead there, in kind of a swamp. I got his baseball glove that he used to play, so it may be that Archie would have some contacts there. They always seem to have a ball team, and we had one too, but it's your Uncle Archie would talk about that a bit, would he?
Yes, he would. Not at length. Being Scots, they don't talk about anything at length. but he would mention playing baseball, and in particular that he was the catcher at some point in time. I don't know whether their times would coincide.
So you feel some roots when you come back, even though you didn't. You grew up just on the edge of this Pearson's Corner there, where the house and the stone school were, was virtually not far from the FAD or from the McKay farm. And then Silver Creek, as you say, is just up the road where Sandy retired to. And are there any McKays around in this community now? I don't think I know of any.
I can't think that there would be. The McKays of our particular line are rather scarce. And of course there are McKays of other lines all over the country, and going way back to the original McKays in Canada, of course, one and possibly two brothers stayed in Nova Scotia, and one went on to Winnipeg, Portage la Prairie, and we have some record of the genealogy connected with that branch, not a complete record by any means.
I think there was a Barbara Marshall, I think, who wrote up some of that history, and my dad was quite interested in there, because he went and stayed out there when he was around 20, helped with the harvest, and stayed for a couple of years apprenticing as a carpenter with Hector McKay, I think. So, yeah, there is quite a strong connection there. I don't know much about the Maritime one. You've been down to the Maritimes, haven't you?
My parents have, which means I think I must have, but I don't remember.
No.
Truro, Nova Scotia,
yeah,
is mentioned. I think a dairy and possibly creamery business around Truro. I think there's a motel at Portage la Prairie that might have been owned by one of the McKays at some point. And certainly my father and Uncle Archie both went out on harvest excursions. How often, I'm not sure. But that connection may have kind of encouraged them to do that.
Right. Bill, we're doing this interview here in the Balnafad United Church as their service to this particular project. They're a long part of the history, of course. Has the church been important in your communities, wherever you've gone?
Well, it has held a position of some importance. My mother and I were both in the choir at St. Paul's United Church in Brampton. And that goes back to the Georgetown community. The Reverend John McDermott knew all of the McKays of my father's generation, possibly knew my Aunt Jessie before he knew the rest of the McKays, because she taught down at Stewarttown, which is just next door to Georgetown. Probably knew my father from Georgetown High School. one way or another, Reverend John was more or less the McKay minister. And they all, Reverend John and the McKays, ended up in Brampton at one point. And I think the fact that he was the minister at St. Paul's United in Brampton actually got us out to church. And we played quite an active part in the church, what with being in the choir. I suppose it was a combination of Reverend McDermott and music that got us there. Great. But to this day, I have a great deal of respect for Reverend McDermott. He seemed to sort of struggle with the same questions that the rest of us struggle with somehow, as opposed to having a book full of answers, and that has always kind of endeared him to me.
Well, the Georgetown Church churches have always been linked in one way or another with Ballinafad, and this church was on a parish with St. Andrew's in Georgetown, had the same minister for a number of years and really prospered in that connection. And St. John, when our family left here and moved to Georgetown, they moved to St. John's as well. So the church is a kind of link wherever we go and has made an important contribution in this community. We found record books in the cupboard there, even up to today, from the Methodist Church going back to about 1880, with the records of Sunday school and young people's and the classes that we're meeting for teaching and so on. So it's an integral part and continues to be part, and it's also a link to for us to this community, because it still is perhaps the most active organization in the community of the FAD today. Thanks very much, Bill, especially for the music part and the link to the violin.